I've never heard a person walk out of the stadium and say, wow, I wish that game would have included more waiting.
He is an endless source of baseball and hockey knowledge.
Jose Berrios, el lanzador de Puerto Rico en el Clásico Mundial de Béisbol.
Sean Morosi, every week with Wyman and Bob.
You're being serious with me right now?
He's here early this week, ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure to have this man whenever he's got time to join us. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, here to talk some baseball, the one, the only, John Morosi. How are you, sir?
Outstanding, my friends. And as soon as I saw that the Mariners were playing in a snowstorm, I said, we got to move this interview up. That's baseball in the snow is my kind of baseball. And so I saw that, loved it. I said to Lefko, we got to move things up. And so here we are on a Monday.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. It was a good weekend. It was, we were talking about it to open the show, John. And of course, you know, you have the cynics, and I get it. You know, they need to see an entire season before they make a judgment. But they, you know, Rockies are bad. I'm not going to put that much into it. I'm like, well, they swept the Reds before that, and the Reds have gone on to win three in a row since and have a better record than the Mariners. The Reds, you didn't beat up on the Sisters of the Poor when you beat the Reds. So I feel like there's reason to be optimistic and excited, at least at this point. Well, all we can go on is what we've seen. But how much has your opinion changed, or has it changed at all? And you just felt like, hey, a matter of time, and this was going to be the team ultimately we would see.
Certainly my opinion of the Mariners at the beginning of the year is that they were a playoff team. And as I look at them right now, they should be a playoff team. Interestingly, and again, the numbers can often be cautionary to look at this time of year. But if you look at Baseball Reference, which of course runs all the simulations and takes in all the underlying numbers, baseballreference.com has the Mariners at 90.1%, 90.1 to make the postseason, and 10.5% to win the World Series. So what that tells me is if you think the Mariners are good, the numbers say that they're great. That's pretty interesting to hear at this early stage of the season. But the last week has reaffirmed what perhaps we have long said, those of us that were optimists about the Mariners, that even if the offense was a little less streaky, to pair up with this consistent pitching, they're going to be really good. And the last week has showcased exactly that. I'm a believer that the overall sport, there are some outliers. The White Sox are not a good team right now. But most of the teams, and I would certainly say the Reds fit into this equation, and the Rockies offensively are a good club, that most teams are a challenge to play against. And this last week has shown just how good the Mariners can be. Now, this next series coming up, I can't wait for, because it's going to be a lot of fun seeing the Mariners face the Rangers. I think a really fun matchup that I know Texas has started to play a little bit better baseball. I saw them over the weekend in Atlanta. I saw them last week in Detroit. They're getting healthier. But this thesis that we've had for a while that we've talked about with the Mariners holds true. The Mariners need to bank their wins early in the year because Texas will get Scherzer back next month, and then DeGrom, and then Malley. They're going to get better and better. And so as long as Seattle has a pretty healthy rotation, and they do, obviously even without Wu, this is their window to really, I think, get some distance in comparison to the rest of the teams in the division, because the Astros' concerns have been prolonged, and they're still there. So big picture right now, I felt at the beginning of the year that this was a playoff team, and honestly, I feel even a little bit better now, looking at the way they've played the last couple weeks.
Yeah, you know, the first division series against Texas. And, yeah, tell us, you know, what do you think is going to be the big matchup? What's going to decide the outcome of this series? They were 0-6 there last year.
Yes. I would say that the number one and number two hitters for Texas, they're always the ones that I'm focused on the most, Semien and Seager. And if you can control them, and then make sure that when Garcia comes to the plate that the bases are as empty as possible, that is a really key element of success. And certainly Nathaniel Lowe is back in the lineup and getting his way back into that routine. Of course, over the weekend was the first game action he'd had all season long because of an oblique injury. Wyatt Langford is still finding his way as a young major league hitter. Going to be a star, I think, but not quite yet. Very similar, and actually is playing better right now than what Jackson Holliday has played for Baltimore. But those are the guys that I key on. If Seattle can control Semien and Seager, then you've got options when Adolis Garcia comes to the plate. But if you've got men on first and second with one out or nobody out and you're facing Garcia, then you got problems because he can do damage and you do not want to have first base occupied when he's up because you want to give yourself some flexibility. So you cannot control the fact that Garcia is going to hit. He's going to hit. Okay. The lineup's going to turn around, but the goal is to make sure that the bases are as empty as possible when he does.
John, I was looking at some numbers with Julio, which are it's a lot of good I'm not going to say bad, but it was pointed out to me by a cynic when I got too excited about Julio's resurgence here. He was hitting 186 with a 238 on base going into that Red Series. Since then, he's now hitting 276 with a 315 on base. I know we're still in that part of the season where one game can raise or drop your average by 15 points or 20 points, but he's got a six-game hitting streak going. In those six games, he's got 13 hits. And then somebody responded to my tweet saying, yeah, he's slapping singles. We already got those guys. He needs to be better. And I'm like, all right, I guess that's fair. 11 of those 13 hits were singles, two doubles, hasn't hit a home run yet, has just eight runs driven in this year. So how do you take that when you look at Julio, who, you know, average wise is climbing, he's got all these hits in a six game hitting streak, yet of his season, 24 hits, 21 are singles, doesn't have a home run, he's not doing the damage. Do you look at that as like everybody else going, this is a matter of time, it's gonna happen? Or do you see something that you go, well, it's his approach? Or what do you see with him?
Not worried really at all with him. And I look at last year, We forget sometimes he was batting .204 with a .376 slug as of May 21st. So take today and basically project forward a month, and he was batting .204 at that point in time last year. Mm. And he rebounded to go 30-30 with 100 RBI. To me, I'm the opposite of worried with respect to this development of him hitting singles and making more contact the last week or so. I look at this as he is now adding another club to his bag, and his ability to hit the ball the other way, drive in runs with singles. I remember and he's not this kind of a hitter, different player, but I remember I covered the Tigers the year that Maglio Ordonez won the batting title, and he drove in this incredible number of runs with singles because he just knew how to hit with men in scoring position. If you take Julio's already amazing skill set, the ability that he has, and you add to that skill set that Justin Turner-esque ability to know how to hit the ball the other way and hit it where it's pitched, and then, yeah, when the pitcher makes a mistake and it's over the heart of the plate, it's pulled for a home run to Edgar's Cantina, great. I look at it as he's developing into a more well-rounded hitter. And we forget he is still so young. He's 23 years old, and we just got done talking about Wyatt Langford. So Julio's 23 years old and Langford's 22, and we talk about how young Langford is. He's just coming into the league. He's less than a year younger than Julio, and I think it's important to give Julio some space to keep developing. And you look at the postseason teams that win in the playoffs, they have guys that are not the all or nothing players. Freddie Freeman, World Series champion in Atlanta, all the times that Altuve has been in the ALCS and the World Series. You think about, again, the way that Texas won last year. Yes, Seager had some extra base power, but that was a team that was able to, I think, with Garcia's power and Seager and Semien, there were guys that just knew how to drive in runs. And that, to me, is a skill. I know it's not always captured by the modern analytics, but when you watch the game, the more you watch it, you really appreciate what someone like Justin Turner is doing right now in Toronto and has done for years. And if Julio can borrow a page from that, again, he's not going to be that player 6 months a year. But if this is what it takes for him to have a little different approach sometimes and just get his base hits, I am here for it, and it's going to make him a better player in October.
JP, shift gears a little bit here. We just saw that Aaron Boone was ejected. Maybe you can tell us that story, because I think somebody was yelling from the fans or from the stands, and But he is, he's a guy that I'm very entertained by. And then we were just looking at like the history. Bobby Cox got thrown out an entire season, 162 ejections. But
yes,
but I think Aaron Boone, a lot of his are very comical. But first of all, what happened? And then who's your all timer as far as throwing temper tantrums?
That's a great one. I've heard some pretty good ejection stories. The first one, just because it came to mind. So I worked at Fox for a number of years with AJ Pierzynski, and there was a he had a back and forth with Joe West, and I probably can't tell you exactly what was being said between Joe West and AJ Pierzynski. It was during spring training, and AJ lives in the Orlando area. He was playing for the Braves at the time. And AJ had some differences of opinion with Joe West's strike zone in a spring training game. And they were going back and forth. And then Joe West ejected AJ, but rather than use the normal nonverbal of you know, throwing him out of the game with a big gesture, Joe West just called time, took leave of his position behind home plate, walked over to then Braves manager Freddie Gonzalez and said, "Freddie, you need a new catcher." That's it. That's how he threw him out. He just walked over, and AJ had to realize what had happened, and he just walked off the field. And I think actually AJ just drove home because he lived basically by the time the fifth or sixth inning had arrived, it was spring training, different rules then. He was just gone. He's okay, I'm out. See you guys later. And he's left. So that's kind of a fun little understated ejection story. I've seen some pretty good ones from Jim Leland over the years. I think we've all had some pretty good Lou Piniella stories. And Aaron Boone is quite animated. That was the there was the issue with the home plate umpire a few years ago, and he basically said to him, "You're having a bad day. I feel sorry for you, but you got to tighten it up," as Aaron said a couple years ago. That was pretty good. But today, you raised the question, and if anybody hasn't seen it yet, he was in this, and God bless the Yes audio team. My goodness, we had the whole thing right there for us, as Ryan Rucco noted on the Yankees broadcast. No need for the John Boy breakdown of it. We had it all in real time, where Hunter Wendelstedt basically said, "Aaron, if I hear one more thing from you, you're gone." And then you could actually tell the Yes Network broadcast zoomed in on Aaron. His mouth didn't move.
Right.
Somebody said something. Aaron said it was from the fans above the dugout, and he threw him out. And basically Hunter's response will get scrutinized, I would say, probably a lot. He basically said, "I don't care if you didn't say it. I heard somebody say it." I'm paraphrasing here, but basically it's your dugout, your responsibility. I heard it and you're gone. But obviously we know that the vocalizations of the fans behind the dugout are fortunately not the purview of the manager. So that chain of command needs to get addressed. I do think that an apology is owed to Aaron Boone on that one. He shouldn't have been thrown out of the game there. That was not right. And listen, umpires 99% of the time do an admirable, great job of managing situations. But when we talk about what the umpiring decision makers look at, situation management is often one of the big ones, and one of the big tenets of that is, are you giving your people a chance to stay in the game? And clearly he did not there, and that was not one of Wendelstedt's better moments.
You know, what's interesting is we often will have the TV on MLB Network here in the studio with obviously the sounds down, but anytime the Reds are playing at the same time as the Pirates, invariably, they do a split screen when Ellie De La Cruz is up at the plate and O'Neill Cruz is up at the plate. And it's just, I've seen it at least three times this season. Their timing is impeccable, but they're both gigantic shortstops. De La Cruz, 6'5", O'Neill Cruz, 6'7". So I get it. Who do you think has more upside between those two? Who is must watch for you?
That is amazing. Wow, that's a tough one. I would probably say Ellie De La Cruz. I just think Ellie, he's already got 10 stolen bases. I mean, it's unbelievable. I just think that he is, the fluidity with which he plays stands out to me. And O'Neill Cruz is an amazing player, too. I just think Ellie De La Cruz is a cut above. Just watch him. He does things and moves on the diamond in a way that very few people who have ever played the game at any position can move. And so I would vote for Ellie De La Cruz, but I think overall that National League Central race is a good one. And somewhat surprisingly, the Cardinals are not really part of it. The Pirates have played well. The Brewers, even without Craig Counsell, they've looked really good. The Cubs look really good. I think the Reds, despite the way they played against Seattle last week, they're a really good team. That divisional race, you know, again, I'm always kind of representing the Midwest in a lot of ways. I'm excited about that race. I think it's going to be a lot of fun with some really interesting personalities. And I think overall around the game, you're seeing some new faces here. And even older teams like the Yankees that look new because of Soto. Soto's come in and just played great. So whether it's Otani, who was delivering on the promise and expectations so far in L.A., Soto doing the same in New York. You got this young group in the National League Central with Cruz and Cruz. Cleveland's got the best record in baseball as they open up today with some new faces there. And also that young pitching has come along, and Naylor's playing like an MVP. So I just think it's a – we got a lot of really good storylines right now in baseball, and I think you're seeing the attendance up as well in a lot of markets. So it's a pretty good way to start the year.
Boy, you mentioned him briefly, but Adolis Garcia is ridiculous. I love watching him play, which, you know, unfortunately, it's when he's doing damage against the Mariners. But, you know, you look at right now, he's got 7 doubles, 22 RBIs, 6 home runs, .326 average. I mean, is he a possible, like how good, where does he rank? I mean, I think obviously he's an all-star, but
sure,
as far as, you know, MVP or anything like that, it just, he's off to a good start anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think he certainly has a chance to be in the MVP race. He is a top 10 pure bat in Major League Baseball right now. And just to, as a quick aside, I talked about St. Louis a moment ago. Oh man, if you ever feel as though your team made a mistake in a trade, go back and revisit the offseason of 2019 to 2020, in which the Cardinals sold Adolis Garcia to the Rangers for cash, and then within 3 weeks traded Randy Arozarena to the Rays.
Oh, my God.
They had them both of them. And you ask yourself, how energetic and how great would that team be if they had both of them? I mean, one of them would be great, but if they had both, they're the best of friends, both from Cuba. They could both be in the St. Louis lineup right now. And that's why, quick, you know, public service announcement, we always talk about different things and, oh, this team should trade for this player, et cetera. All that stuff is fun. But the job of the team is to know your own players and to know who you're trading and know who you're giving up and all those things. And sometimes the right trades are the ones you don't make. And, my goodness, what a missed evaluation. That's like a... that's a franchise changer right there, to just not know what you've got. Anyways, but Garcia, for me, top 10 bat. And I'll just say this anecdotally, you know, I'm very fortunate when we do the broadcasts, I'm you know, right next to the dugouts. And so when you have him at the plate, your antenna goes up a little bit, because if that ball's hit your way, it's coming in hot. And he's just a lot of fun to watch. So physical and strong. And can just elevate the ball out of any ballpark. And I think that's something we were talking about this a bit, you know, last weekend, about just how, you know, the big ballpark there in Texas, I think Dan Plesac mentioned this, you know, it played big, especially in that first World Series that was played there in 2020. But, man, he can make that thing look small with just his incredible power and strength. So huge fan of the way that Adolis plays the game.
Hey, quickly, John, I just want to get your take on Shohei Ohtani, who – you know, often we see guys who sign big deals with new teams and maybe they get off to a slow start before they really start finding their rhythm. And, you know, it's a big change, a lot of pressure. And he's certainly got a different level of attention because of A, the contract, B, the controversy with it, with his interpreter and everything. Yet it seems to have had zero impact on him going into action today. Leads all of Major League Baseball in average, .368. Leads all of Major League Baseball in hits with 35. He's got 5 home runs. He's got 13 runs driven in. It's amazing to see somebody like that with that spotlight, and some of it very controversial, obviously, seem wildly unaffected by any of it. Are you surprised by that at all?
Well, it's interesting. We had a conversation. It was the second week of the season when the Ipe Mizuhara case and controversy investigation was still somewhat new, and we were in the office of Dodger manager Dave Roberts, and we were asking him just how Ohtani has handled the situation. And Dave basically said to us, he is as good at compartmentalizing as anybody I've ever been around, is what he said. And Dave has obviously been a World Series winning manager. He won a World Series as a player with Boston. He's played with a lot of Hall of Famers and prominent guys. And he said that Ohtani is as great of a compartmentalizer as he has ever been around. And clearly, this, you know, there's a lot that we don't know about Shohei. He's sort of very private, and there's a lot about his bio and just his journey that we're not really privy to. But when he has success like this, on a stage like this, with noise around him like this, it does make you sit back and say, huh, okay, now this all makes sense. Now we realize how he was able to get here in the first place. And I think the quick point I'll make too on this, we forget how much money he gave up by coming over when he did to pursue the challenge of playing in Major League Baseball. And certainly he knew that the advantage of coming here when he did to the Angels was, A, you start your service time clock earlier, and B, there'd be some endorsements and other things. But he could have hit a nine-figure contract or higher had he just waited two more years to accumulate the additional service time in Japan. He would have then been considered a pro player, not an amateur, and so that's treated differently in baseball's CBA. He gave up nine figures by coming out 2 years early. Hmm. And some players would have, those dollar signs would have been there every strikeout that you had, every hit you gave up, you would have been thinking about that. But clearly he didn't. And the more that we learn about him, and really a lot of it's just by watching him play, because there's not a lot that he gives us about his personal story, it really does start to make sense how he has become the player that he is. And it's just it's a joy to watch. He's one of one in the history of the game.
So are you, John. You're one of one, by God.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, my friends. I do not deserve it, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
And, stop it right
and
there.
And next time, hey, we'll get into more about the crack. And I see Ron Francis non-committal on the future of the coaching staff, which, I don't know, guys. They have some more evaluating to do, which maybe is evaluating what their options would be if they ended up making a change. Somewhat behind the scenes is kind of how I read that, but we'll see what that means here in the days ahead.
John, have an awesome week, man. We look forward to the conversation next week.
You bet. Enjoy the draft. May the Seahawks and Lions both select wisely.
Yes, there we absolutely. Go. Absolutely.
Thanks, JP.
There you go. John Morosi with us each and every week. How do you know those were my two favorite teams?
Yeah, that's right. Coincidentally.
If you missed anything from John Morosi, you can always find it on the podcast page at seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab and click on our picture. It'll be right there after the show. Click subscribe. That's how you get it done. Perfectly. Coming up, what better way to start off the draft week by catching up with our guy, Lofa Tatupu. He is going to join us next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It's always an honor when we get a chance to speak to this guy. He's known as a Seahawks legend, but when you get the compliments he gets from a guy like Dave Wyman, calling him one of the smartest football players he's ever seen and his favorite Seahawk of all time,
even,
that's high praise.
He's even ahead of me.
Yeah, you like him more than you like you.
In my mind.
that's when you know you've reached the mountaintop, by God. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He's the one, the only Lofa Tatupu back with us once again. How are you, man?
I'm good, fellas. Just watching some playoff basketball because that's the only time I watch the playoffs because they play defense, you know? Usually 140 to 150, like an all-star game.
Yeah, you're right about that. Hey, before we get into the draft and what the Seahawks should do, in your opinion, may do, I want to get your take on what has become a big story around there, which I'm sure you've heard about at this point. I haven't looked on your Twitter page to see if you've weighed in or not, but it's what John Schneider is referring to as picture gate out there at the facility. Some pictures being taken down. Some fans really thinking that's the wrong move. Others saying it's no big deal. Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor have certainly made their feelings on it known, and they're not fans of it. As a guy that's considered one of the greats to play for this team, I haven't seen how many pictures are there of you or not, but is that something you as a player think is no big deal, or do you question it? What's your response to all of that?
I don't think I've ever seen a picture of me up there, so I'm fine with it. You know, get rid of them all. No, I'm just, I, So I don't. Well, what I need to know more, because I just heard about this, but like, what pictures were taken down? Do we know? Like, yeah. Did John elaborate on it?
Yeah, I went in there, Loaf. It's that, you know, that hallway, the long hallway down to like where the training room is, that wall that is the, yep. It's like the outside of the indoor facility, basically. There was, yep, these huge banners, and I think, we're trying to remember who, like, I think there was just, Cam.
There was Cam, Marshawn, Richard.
Yeah. Yeah, had Sherman running out of his shoe in, yeah, the Houston game when he had that interception. So, yeah, it was all from, like, the same era. But everything else that they left in there, Loaf, is like they left the whole banner of the Super Bowl, all the banners of one divisions and the Ring of Honor people, you know, all of that is still in there. It's just that one stretch of that wall where, you know, there's pictures from a specific era. And I think, so to me, I thought maybe Mike McDonald wants to represent every era. Like, why not the Holmgren era? Why not Lofa? Why not Matt? Why not Dave Craig or Steve Largent? So, yeah, I don't know. I to me, it all kind of made sense, but it sounds like you don't have a horse in the race, because
he's not representing.
We got to get Lofa to Tupu pictures up there, man.
I don't have a picture in a frame, so.
Yeah, I bet you there's one in the building. I bet if we looked at somebody, go, oh yeah, here's a big picture of him here, and here's one here. I bet you there's pictures of you there. Yeah.
Well, my question is, what do they do with those? Can I have them? Like, where are those things going?
You have walls big enough in your house for those?
Yeah. I'll find a spot, man. Those things are awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things are huge. Yeah, I don't know. You know, they will always be, you know, the standard, those guys. You know, when me, Walter Jones, and all those guys, the old guys, came in, we raised the standard up from years previous. And then when we left and they came in, they raised it to another level. So, you know, they'll always be the standard. I don't think that will ever be misinterpreted by any fan or anybody until someone comes along and, you know, either replicates what they did or goes even higher, goes even farther.
Yeah. Well, Lofa, let's get to the draft and just your thoughts on, you know, it's kind of, we were talking about, you know, that's a lot of pressure on John Schneider. Like, he's kind of running the show and, you know, hires the coach and everything is pretty much in his hands. I don't know if you've looked at these mock drafts. There must be like 30,000 of them. But I'm just curious who you think. Is there anybody that you like that you've seen that you would take with that 16th pick?
I mean, I'd love to go linebacker, but that's probably a little biased there. So what I think we really need is help in the trenches, either offensively, a guard, or, you know, defensively, another D tackle. I think you really, that's, Dave, to me and Bob, this is where the game's won, in the trenches. And, you know, I'm not saying you could just put anybody behind them at running back and at, you know, linebacker, but it does make the job a lot easier. I will say that much.
What do you think, just from your perspective, is the toughest position to evaluate? Because we see success and failure every year, Lofa. This guy excels. This guy turns into a bust, and it's at various positions. Some are more high profile than other. But if you were the GM or you were the guy kind of helping shape the draft, which position do you think would be the hardest to sort of nail down as this guy is going to make that jump from college to pro very well?
It's got to be quarterback. I mean, how many times every year do we hear that there's four or five guys in the first round that they're definitely the guy, they're going to be the next, you know, so-and-so. And it's just, it's a tough position to play. It's, you know, the hardest position to play, for sure. And so, you know, just to know, okay, how resilient is this kid? What kind of competitive makeup does he have? You know, like, when things don't go well, like, not just in crunch time, you know, final couple of minutes of the game, can he, you know, lead us to a victory? But just, you know, even if we start him early and like that, because that's really, it's kind of ruined a lot of guys. And you see, like, a lot of guys that have gotten, you know, to take the time and even just sit for 1 year. Mahomes, right? First round pick, very easily could have just been thrown out there. And I'm sure he would have done fine. But, you know, if a guy loses confidence, it's everything at every position, but especially a quarterback. You know, if you lose confidence there and then you don't feel like the team is rallying around you, and then all of a sudden the fans, you're hearing from it, it's just tough to rebound from that, I think. And, you know, it's never solely on the quarterback, but that's rightfully so, who gets all the praise when things go great, and then who gets, you know, some of the blame when it goes bad. So I think just evaluating that and just finding out what kind of competitor the guy is really, you know, how has he bounced back from performances before? How has he led the team? What kind of leader is he? Those are the things, more so than the stats, that I'd be looking at if I were to ever be a GM.
Yeah, you know, what do you think of Penix? Because I feel like, you know, there's lots of choices that they could make if it falls to them. I think he's going to get drafted before the Seahawks get there. But, what have you seen from him? Because I feel like if you can solve your quarterback problem, I mean, that's huge. I mean, there's only 10 or 12 teams that have, you know, that guy that's the franchise quarterback truly. And, yeah, what have you seen out of Penix as far as leadership, all of the things that you want out of your quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, he hits every mark, you know, not just from throwing the ball, but also in the leadership category, seeing him on the sidelines, you know, go up and down and tell him, hey, we get the ball back, we're going to go score. You know, it's in that Oregon game. I think that's when he was freestyling. It couldn't have been a more, you know, intense moment. And he's just like, don't even worry about it. I got this. He's over there, you know, rapping on the sidelines. It was amazing. And sure enough, he got his chance and he threw a strike to, I think it was Odunze, and they win the game. But incredible talent too. And then, you know, he's matured. I think he's been in college 5 or 6 years. So, you know, that's one big thing, question mark, that you don't have to worry about. He's handled himself well. And, you know, he's gonna be a pro when he gets here. And just all those, you know, reps, I think that's the biggest thing, that like him, Nix, Daniels, these guys that have been in school 5, 6 years, they, you know, it's hard to get all those reps. And especially if you only play 4 years in college and you come to the NFL as a quarterback and you're not the guy, you know, you're not getting a ton of practice reps, maybe in camp, you know, to save the starter's arm. But other than that, you know, you really have to wait your turn to get that experience. So I think that really bodes well for, you know, all these guys that did have an extra year or two because of COVID, red shirt, all that stuff. But yeah, I don't think he'll be there either when we're drafting. I think that'd be a shock to me too.
Lofa, before we let you go, do you want to shout out your guys? You had a group of guys that were listening last time you wanted to shout out.
Oh, no, they don't get a shout-out this time. That was a one-time thing.
Okay.
You must be really good friends with these guys.
Yeah. No, I will when we get close. I'm going to be on again. That way you have to bring me back. You always, you know, leave them wanting more, right? You know?
Yes, yes.
I love it. You're gonna get a text as soon as you get off this call here. They're going to, dude.
I'm going to get 8 texts. I guarantee it.
Well, just let them know I tried.
Well, we'll get you back on then. Now we have to.
All right, to the Gig Harbor crew, I appreciate you, boys.
Lofa, we always appreciate you, man. Thanks as always, and we look forward to talking again soon.
All right, fellas, take care.
Thanks, Lofa.
There you go. Lofa Tutupu with us. I love that. No. They don't get it this time. I tried, guys. You're Gig Harbor guys. I tried. All right. Coming up, Michael Penix has an answer for teams who doubt he can stay healthy. We're going to hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, it did start off kind of shaky last night for Emerson Hancock. The first three batters reached. He gave up a double that led to 2 runs. So it was kind of a tough start. But after that first inning, settled in nicely, allowed just 3 base hits the rest of the way. And Emerson Hancock was asked how he was able to settle in after that tough first inning.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is just keep attacking, right? Like, you know, you start to get nitpicky, you start picking out corners, and just like, you just got to get back over the plate, trusting your stuff, knowing that I got a really good defense behind me, and just kind of let those guys work.
I love what he's been able to do since he got thrown in there. A guy who was not expected to be with the big club. He was supposed to be in AAA.
For the whole season, or was there a projection like mid-season call-up?
I think unless there was going to be injuries, he was going to be in AAA. And he's a guy, I don't think he's a top-of-the-rotation guy. I think he's a guy who could occupy this spot, that fifth starter spot. And he's pitched very well, considering I hold them to a different standard than I do Logan, Kirby, Castillo. Again, considering the circumstances, but his last two games, he's gone 12 combined innings, allowed 3 earned runs, and just 8 total hits. He's had one bad game, the game against Milwaukee. He was bad. He got lit up in that game, 8 runs. But the first game of the year, 3 runs, 5 1/3. Last two, quality starts.
Yeah.
Fifth starter who got thrown in there because of injury. He's giving you exactly what you need.
Yeah, well, and like you said, I mean, if he was one of the, you know, the top three or four, I mean, if these were Logan's numbers, yeah, you'd be disappointed. But don't you feel like every rotation pretty much has... When we always talk about it, same thing with offensive line. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody has an offensive line where the center, both guards, and both tackles are just studs, right?
Yeah.
The Cowboys might have. We might have. With, you know, it's very rare. It's very rare. So I love what he's doing. And, yeah, he seems very mature. I mean, you look at his face. He's looks like he's 12 years old, Bob. But he does. He sounds like a veteran there, man, the way he's talking about getting through the games.
Sweeping the dial.
Michael Penix continues to get a lot of interest around him. He was on with Colin Cowherd a few days ago, and in the course of their conversation, Colin asked him, you know, what concerns teams might have about his medical history.
For me, I feel like it was just bad luck, you know, and obviously off of all my injuries, you know, I was coming off of, you know, injury each and every year, so it was tough. I didn't get off seasons, you know, since I first got to college until I got to Washington, you know, so I feel like, you know, having those two off seasons at Washington, you know, being able to get strong in the weight room, you know, on the field and stuff like that, it definitely helps, you know, but at the same time, you know, I really don't focus on that, you know. I just hope a team know what they're going to get out of me, and that's a winner and somebody that's going to elevate everybody around me. So at the end of the day, I got all my medical records came in, everything came clear, you know, saw different doctors, you know, that gave me the check marks that I'm clear to go. So at this point, it's not in my hand.
Yeah, I think we should start categorizing these as the Mitch Haniger syndrome. Like, he got in accidents. It's not like he wore down, right?
Right.
I mean, and I feel like that's what's going on with him. By the way, very thoughtful kid. Really, I like what he puts together and what he brings and
what he wrote. He
that was amazing,
it perfectly.
Man. Yeah, it was almost like he wrote that.
He did. Yeah.
I didn't get that part in the beginning. But yeah, I mean,
in the Players Tribune is what we're talking about for those who are just tuning in.
Yeah, and it was incredibly thoughtful.
Well, and it was a great point in that he was talking about, I'm kind of glad I got injured in one way because, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he was saying, you saw how I responded to it. You saw how I bounced back. Other people that haven't been injured, you don't know what they're going to do or how they're going to respond. Do they recover from a dramatic injury? Are they in a shell? Are they, you know, up in their head and they don't trust it? So you've seen, how does this guy handle true adversity? And you've seen it on multiple occasions. And then he said, if you want to basically get to know who I am, use an EKG, talking about his heart.
That's pretty cool.
Sweeping the dial.
You guys mentioned Shohei Ohtani to John Morosi earlier. Well, he broke a scoreless tie in the third yesterday with a 2-run homer. Turned out to be a pretty important one.
Smashes this ball. Forget about it. Marte doesn't even move. It's gone. 2-0 LA. The 176th of Ohtani's career. He stands alone for Japanese-born sluggers. He's passing Hideki Matsui. Yeah, everyone that he hits is significant because he's the one that hit it, but some of them carry a little bit of extra sparkle.
How about that? He breaks the record held by Hideki Matsui, and I believe he did it in about 2,500 fewer at-bats.
Wow.
I think was the number. I'll have to go back and look. I mean, a few thousand fewer played at-bats, and he does that. And again, we talked to John Morosi about it, a guy who, going into action today, leading all of Major League Baseball in average, leading all of Major League Baseball in hits. He's amongst leaders. He's got 5 home runs.
Well, and you brought up the fact, and I think this is very important, the fact that he's in the midst of this whole thing with his translator. I mean, I thought for sure it would affect his numbers and affect his game, and it's quite the opposite.
And moving to a new team and having that contract, everybody's, you know, I mean, just being under that pressure, that spotlight to perform for my new club and fans. We've seen guys sort of get off to really slow starts in situations like that.
Yeah. Well, and you'd think he would lead pretty much every category on their team, but they have Mookie Betts.
He's my guy.
6 home runs, 19 RBIs. 469 on base percentage, but God, yeah,
ridiculous.
But Ohtani, I mean, I was watching a breakdown, I think it was yesterday, and I think it was Mark DeRosa on MLB Central, and he was talking about his hips and how he gets his hips involved, and he's already so big and strong, but just that power source there and how he gets that started first and just crushes the ball. I think he hit a home run here, I think it was a couple of years ago, that was one of the most awesome, majestic home runs I've ever seen.
He's ridiculous. He's the unicorn for sure.
All right, coming up, another early edition this week of a guy who is always a favorite of ours and yours, certainly, El Hombre. Michael Bradley joins us next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.